Doctor coming right up. But first, I would like to let you know that the views and opinions expressed throughout the broadcast day are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of the station staff, underwriters, or volunteers. Occasionally, speakers are speaking for other folks as well. Time is made available for all sorts of viewpoints, especially yours, if you call up during an appropriate time, of course, and give it to us. Yay, we love our listeners. And support for the Herb Doctor comes from Tony Jones, who provides Niazii Healing, a hands-on healing philosophy where together Tony and her client can explore old patterns and beliefs that no longer serve. Once empowered with new perspectives, different choices can be made, moving towards a life that's truly desired. Contact Tony Jones at 707-223-2724 for further information or to schedule an appointment. And we have the Herb Doctors.
Well, welcome to this month's Ask Your Herb Doctor. My name's Andrew Murray.
And my name's Sarah Johannesson Murray. Welcome.
So today's Friday, April the 15th, 2022. The subject of this month's discourse is COVID. The more you vaccinate, the greater your chance of getting COVID. We'll be joined with Dr. Raymond Pete in just a bit, but I wanted to open up the beginning of the show with a couple of paragraphs related to the beginning subject of tonight's discourse. We'll talk about COVID, we'll talk about authoritarianism and free speech and things surrounding disinformation. I think it's a fairly hot topic. So the fully vaccinated now infected at triple the rate of the unvaccinated. An article by Steve Kirch, April 6, 2022, outlines the worldwide reporting, including thorough evaluations done by the governments of Australia, New Zealand, and the UK. In the case of the once completely open government reporting agency of the UK, the UK Health Security Agency, instead of stopping the vaccines, the UK government stopped the data as the overwhelming results implied vaccine-driven infections were becoming widespread, and the main cause of continuing viral infection was the continued drive to further vaccinate the general public. It doesn't get any more egregious. Don't take my word for it, check yourself. The vaccines are driving infection amongst the vaccinated primarily, as the unvaccinated get over infection, which was never the deadly pandemic that was media-driven. In the early days of the pandemic, people like Professor Sucharit Bacardi were warning about the repercussions, stating thrombosis and clot formation were likely. Many sudden deaths from this have occurred, especially in the young. 15 countries suspended the AstraZeneca vaccine after this was highlighted last year. Both disseminated intravascular coagulation and cerebral venous thrombosis were the causes. It does seem that all the hype and social control are losing traction as we learn to live with, not vaccinate against, COVID. Cardiomyopathies among the young increased at an alarming, never-before-seen rate driven by the drug, along with sudden cardiac arrest, multiple autoimmune syndromes, together with crippling stroke and the already mentioned clot formation. But the damage has been done, and are we ready for the next rollout? How many will gladly take the next shot? And has the Ukrainian war and Russia's bombing of it distracted us from the crumbling economy, not just of America, but nations worldwide, whilst the next contagion is prepared? Disinformation has been a tactic of warfare since the beginning, but the truth's always present. Dr. Peter McCulloch exemplifies this in his tireless crusades, both to the Senate testimonies nationally and governments internationally, along with Dr. Robert Malone, pioneer of the very technology used to create the experimental drug used, and many other scientists opposed it from the beginning. Dr. Pete, you stated this from the beginning also, and it's a testimony to you that you were sounding the alarm regarding the fabrication of the infection and death data early in 2020 when we did the first COVID show with you in March 2020. We spent most of 2020 and a lot of 21 doing shows on COVID with you describing just this. And so where are we now? Dr. P, are you with us?
Yes.
Well, thank you for joining us. For those who are listening, Dr. Raymond Pete has been with us for quite some time now, sharing his expertise with many subjects. We'll get back his information towards the end of the show, but we're very pleased to have you with us again. So before I ask you the question, where are we now, would you please outline your academic and scientific background for people that may or may not have heard you?
I was working in the humanities, linguistics in particular, for several years before I decided to go back to graduate school, first intending to concentrate on brain biology, but seeing the dogmatic nature of that department, I looked around for a more scientific part of biology and found that happened to be the reproductive physiology, and so I did my dissertation on the physiology of aging in the reproductive system, especially oxidative changes with age. And since then, I've been applying those insights to both going back and studying brain physiology with a new perspective and working out the ways to intervene in the problems of aging and stress.
All right, thank you. So getting to the opening part of tonight's discussion, we've spoken at length over the months from 2020, or March 2020, until now, doing shows on COVID, and you were right there in March 2020 saying there's something seriously wrong with the data about the infection rates. You said very plainly, and has been recorded on our shows, which are recorded every third Friday of the month, so people can check out the archives.
Actually, while we're talking about the numbers, Dr. Pete, can you outline what you saw happening with the overall mortality in the first couple months of 2020?
For a while, the Centers for Disease Control, the last months of 2019 into the first few months of 2020, they showed a historically unique drop in the total mortality of the United States. And that was very attention-getting. But by the summer, they did another historically unique thing of going back and revising the numbers, because people were talking about did they save up and not report the deaths for several months with the foreknowledge that they would need to have some kind of documentation for a surge of deaths when the pandemic was declared. So just as a few of us were predicting that very weird historical process starting in the fall of 2019 and continuing up until the spring of 2020 when the pandemic was declared, that was revised. I think it was in May or June that the CDC said, well, that was mistaken for some reason. Every health department in the country was very, very slow in reporting all the deaths. So really, those numbers weren't right. And then when we have this surge of, a huge surge of so-called COVID deaths, that wasn't deaths that had been saved up. Those were new and real deaths. But looking at the same figures, the very week that the pandemic death surge occurred, it happened again uniquely in history that the annual number of deaths ascribed to influenza that had been going on every year as long as records were kept, suddenly influenza deaths disappeared from the record, suddenly just falling off a cliff. The very week that the very high death rate was reported for COVID, that whole thing, if anyone that looked at the numbers found it impossible to believe that that was some kind of a statistical event of, other than manipulation.
Right, thank you.
A few people like James Corbett with the Corbett Report had already been, I guess he started with people like the speeches given by Eric Schmidt, formerly of Google, moved over to the Pentagon in a committee studying artificial intelligence in the spring and several months after the spring of 2019. He was giving the judgment of his committee in the Department of Defense, confirming ideas that had been put out in, I think it was 2010 or 2011, by the Rockefeller Foundation. And Eric Schmidt in the Pentagon said, yeah, their projections are just right. We have to destroy the existing economies, the old-fashioned legacy economies, so that we can install artificial intelligence, digital economies, and achieve high efficiency very quickly to keep the Chinese from dominating the world economy. James Corbett had worked out, watching what the Federal Reserve and the masses of chief executives of the giant corporations, what they were, the precautions they were taking. And you could see the movement in the money. Something was about to go haywire in the whole financial system. And it happened that the practice runs for a pandemic of a coronavirus, which had been acted out in New York in the fall of 2019, those preparations were in place, ready to install as soon as they had some real-world event to justify these extreme changes.
Right, that pandemic playout was the event 201 you're referring to, right?
I didn't hear that.
The pandemic mock-up event that you're referring to was Event 201.
Right? The mock-up of what they would do around the world simultaneously when the coronavirus epidemic had everything almost exactly as it happened, predicted several months in advance. And the plan, going back to the Rockefeller Foundation 10 years earlier, was to use that as an excuse to destroy the old economies, allowing the digital economies and artificial intelligence to take over. And the purpose of that was to prevent the worldwide financial crisis from hurting the billionaire class. And by destroying middle class, medium and small businesses, the pandemic measures, lockdowns in particular, destroyed the local economies to the extent that people had to do their shopping online, meaning that Amazon got this gigantic multi-billion dollar boost in income. And Eric Schmidt, almost a year earlier, had said that that was what they were working on doing. So it was clear from the speeches of these highly influential government people that they were intending to shift power and wealth from the masses of especially middle-class businesses over to the billionaire monopoly class.
Right, and that's what some people have said. Walmart didn't close. All the big chain stores did not close, but the independent shop owners were put out of business.
Yeah, all of the billionaires multiplied their wealth hugely. And just a few months ago, it was obvious that people were getting a little informed about the actual nature of the so-called pandemic and were getting tired of losing their incomes. And the government came up with not just a distraction, but a further manipulation of finances such that there was even a greater beginning shift of moving wealth from the masses of the people, everyone who heats their house or drives a car, for example, is having to pay several times more for their heat and gasoline, while the American oil companies happen to have a tremendous increase of sales under the pressure of cutting off purchases of cheap gas and oil from Russia and forcing Europe to do the same with the threat of extreme depression in Europe. But in that one move, the U.S. oil companies are enriched, while Europe and ordinary people in the United States are suffering great economic shortfalls. And so exactly what the pandemic had been working towards for 10 years or more was intensified around the time that the effectiveness of the pandemic was weakening. They came up with sanctions, and by sanctioning the possibility of buying your oil and gas from Russia at very low prices, it poured all of the consumers' money into the American oil companies and energy companies. And at the same time, Russia had markets for the oil that Europe and America wouldn't buy, and the price of oil went up, and so Russia is making much, much more money now with the sanctions. So the sanctions are taking money away from Americans, giving it to the billionaires and to the Russian economy.
Wow. Well, unbelievable. Let me just interject there, Dr. Pete, and give people the call-in information before we carry on. You're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor, KMUD Garbleville, 91.1 FM. From 7:30 till the end of the show at 8 o'clock, you're invited to call in with questions. This month, we're surrounding the increasing infection amongst the vaccinated, the rollout of the totalitarian plan, and it's not... It's not fiction, it's fact, and you can check it any which way you like. Dr. Pete, you've already outlined, let me give you the number first, 707-923-3911, 707-923-3911. So, Dr. Pete, in that first discourse, you've neatly summed up the whole plan, as it were, clearly outlined from the Rocker Foundation's inception of their Event 201 and their 2011 papers. We've already found out from multiple sources how coronaviruses were being manipulated, the whole gain-of-function research that was done. Fauci is completely embroiled in all of it. So are all the big multinational drug companies that already had the technology from Dr. Malone's pioneering work in 1990s on viruses and engineering them, and how all of this, even the patents for these very viruses, which were granted completely illegally, but granted nonetheless, and that we've had programs about that, and there's plenty of information, factual information, to let people find more about this. These viruses themselves are patented, and the whole thing was a huge scheme to monopolize control both over the production of the drug, the distribution of the drug, the testing of the virus itself, and the entire machinery of it was geared and funneled into very few select corporations, and governments have been completely complicit in this. So getting back to the thrust and the content around my first question to you, Dr. Pete, where are we now? Steve Kirsch's newsletter that outlined the results both from the UK Ministry of Health, the New Zealand Ministry of Health, and the Australian government's health databases all show that the fully vaccinated are affected at twice the rate of the unvaccinated. The UK data, it's not quite three times, but it's twice the rate. And that there's a record-breaking outbreak in Australia, seeing a 1,700% higher death rate than the start of the pandemic. Now, Dr. Malone, when he first started coming forward, I think he stepped out of the shadows, I think, initially, obviously, as an inventor of this technology for mRNA vaccines. I think somehow his hand was forced through his ideals, and he saw what was happening and basically decided to just expose what had been going on and what was going on as a nefarious procedure, because these drugs had very well known and thought out side effects. I mean, the antibody-dependent enhancement that was being talked about in the early days, the autoimmune diseases, and then the whole potential for weakening the immune system is what we are seeing now amongst the vaccinated. They are repeatedly getting coronavirus infections, and they are forming the largest cohort of people dying. So without laboring that point any further, how would you speak to the increasing infection amongst the vaccinated, and how you think this is, I'd hate to say it, the whole part of the plan of the rollout of the coronavirus quote-unquote vaccine, but it's ultimately resulting in a much more severe situation rather than contracting this relatively survivable disease and getting lifelong, robust, durable immunity that Dr. Peter McCulloch has been crusading for 20-something months, testifying to Congress and to international governments, saying that it's got to be stopped because the safety data is completely off the rails, and we'd never have got by regular trials had it not been a quote-unquote emergency use authorization that was granted to it. So, and what do you say about the increasing infections amongst the vaccinated individuals, and how you see this playing out in the future?
A few virologists have been giving some of the mechanisms that explain it. The German virologist, Suchard Bhakti, for example, has a couple of very good videos showing the simplified mechanisms of how the immune system works, what the difference is between native immunity and vaccine-induced immunity. The natural immunity, which lasts a lifetime, is completely different from the immunity from a vaccine, which originally they were saying that the vaccines would produce a lifetime of immunity, but it has turned out that I think every vaccine, when it has been investigated a few years after the vaccination, all of the vaccines in use last only a very short time, and it's especially true with the COVID RNA vaccines, that they fade out in just a few months, and so they are saying that it's going to be necessary to get a renewal and a reactivation about every year to maintain some immunity. But the when you think about the mechanisms explained by Dr. Bhakti, that you're going backwards the more of the booster shots you take. And basically the reason for that is that natural immunity, and this in a way includes the original effective smallpox vaccine, natural infections occur either through the skin getting scratched or the germ rubbed in, or by inhalation or ingestion. And those routes activate an extremely complex system, starting from the very surfaces inside the skin, inside the mucous membranes and lining of the digestive system. Starting there, there are cascades of reactions ending up with some antibodies, but the antibodies in natural immunity are just a tiny sort of backup part of the process. The real immunity involves your whole body, many, many different cellular systems. The reason the smallpox vaccine was so effective was that it was given by a natural intradermal, scratching your skin, for example, with the antigen of the virus. That activated the natural immunity and produced more or less lifelong immunity. But several doctors, looking at their, they allowed some of the parents to decline vaccination of their kids, and they kept good records of what happened subsequently over several years to the kids who avoided the dozens of vaccinations that the obedient kids were getting. And looking at their records, the difference is essentially black and white. The kids who avoided the whole range of many of the standard vaccines, nothing to do with the RNA vaccines, just the standard intramuscular injection of antigens. The kids who avoided the vaccinations, or at least most of them, were absolutely in a different group for having almost no sicknesses during childhood and having drastically lower rates of hyperactivity syndromes, while the obediently vaccinated kids had all of the usual complaints, frequent respiratory infections, a high rate of behavior disorders, and so on. And that it doesn't, since the smallpox vaccine is no longer given, it doesn't say that the smallpox vaccine would have had that effect, but for well over 100 years, people have been studying the effect of injecting anything intramuscularly, especially if it comes with a powerful producer of inflammation, such as aluminum hydroxide. But any irritant injected into the muscle, where it goes directly into contact with nerve axons and blood vessels, the effects of any intramuscular injection are fairly drastic when you look at large numbers of them. They were calling it the injection syndrome and various things. It was polio virus, for example, taken orally, didn't produce the same rate of paralysis that any kind of injected material, even if it wasn't a vaccine, predisposed the part that was injected, like the left arm or the right leg, to paralytic polio. So the effects, the harmful effects of ordinary vaccines are very significantly partly the result of the injecting a powerful antigen, which animal experiments show that the antigen is taken up not only by the bloodstream, but by the nerve axons. And there is a two-way transportive substance in the big nerves all the way from your leg or arm, for example, transported directly into the cell body in the brain or spinal cord. And the animal experiments showed that the microparticles of aluminum hydroxide can be traced very quickly, just a day or two, from the injection site into the nerve body cell in the brain, where it then affects the disposition of the of that part of the body to be especially susceptible to paralysis or other injury.
That's very interesting, Dr. Pete, bringing up the issue of smallpox vaccine being so successful because it was scratched into the skin. Because when we were studying in England, the microbiologist that came to the herbal school to teach us microbiology worked for the British government as a microbiologist, and they told us, students, that the only successful vaccine in the history of vaccination was the smallpox vaccine. So I wonder why they didn't take that clue of its success being because it was scratched into the skin in a more natural way and thereby basically granted lifelong immunity to smallpox. I wonder if medicine will come around eventually to making vaccines like that.
If you look at the history of where the idea of using a hypodermic needle to administer drugs at first and then vaccines later. The one branch of professional medicine wanted to monopolize the business and keep the herbalists and natural healers of all of the different schools, homeopathy and naturopathy and so on, to keep them out of the business. And finally, they got the laws passed that gave them a monopoly on injecting things intravenously or intramuscularly. And so there was no science justifying the need to inject a drug. The herbalists gave teas, and the naturopaths gave foods and so on. There's absolutely no rationale. They invent rationales such as substances are destroyed in the stomach if you don't inject them and so on. Again, no science supporting it in almost every case. It was simply a way of monopolizing the way to give what they said was the only effective way to administer drugs, and that got carried over to crazily giving vaccines in the worst possible way.
Wow, it was job security.
You're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor on KMUD Garberville 91.1 FM. From now until the end of the show, you're invited to call in with questions. Dr. Raymond Peake joining us for this month's discourse on the continuing saga with COVID-19. And then towards the middle, late part of the show, we're going to get into the authoritarian model that is being foisted on us. So the number is 707-923-3911, 707-923-3911.
Dr. Peake, I wanted to ask you how you would respond to someone who has been vaccinated and says, well, I might still get COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2, but I won't die from it and the symptoms will be much less severe. I might get it over and over, but I'll be fine every time and I won't die from it. How would you respond to someone's...
Ask for the evidence supporting that. CDC simply, when they saw the vaccine didn't prevent infections and didn't prevent spreading the disease, they just out of thin air said, well, it's preventing hospitalizations and death. But the figures, they manipulated the figures and included people who had not been vaccinated at the beginning, the first few months of the vaccination campaign, the number of vaccinated was building up gradually. And so if you looked at the whole span, it was only the more recent ones who had had the full two or three doses of vaccines, and using very crudely misrepresented statistics was the best they could do. And now, the last several months, such as Steve Kirsch's observations, the figures are very clear that more people are dying, being hospitalized, and getting sick in proportion to their number of vaccinations.
And you've got a couple callers.
Okay, hold on one moment. So, Dr. Peake, just to finish that topic up, that was a talking point for Big Pharma. Is that what you're saying?
Just a made-up phrase that they could repeat hundreds of times until people said, well, that's the truth.
Yes, okay, thank you.
I just want to make sure for people that are listening that if you want to go check out Professor Sucharit Bhakad Bhakti's work, let me spell his name for you. He's German, but he's Indian. Sucharit, Sucharit. And his last name is Bhakdi.
K-H.
Say again, Dr. Pete.
It's Bhakdi.
K-H, Bhakti. Excellent. Okay, thanks for that. Let's take this first caller. Caller, you're on the air. Where from? What's your question?
I'm from the Arcata, northern Humboldt Bay area. Humboldt Bay, yeah. So I was just going to make a comment regarding your statement about the, basically the people who, the greatest number of people getting infected now are those that have been vaccinated. And I wasn't sure if basically because the majority, I mean, we have, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's the majority of people are vaccinated, so the numbers are higher on that cohort of people. And number two, the Omicron variants are bypassing or infecting vaccinated people. So it kind of makes sense that you would have the largest number of people being the vaccinated group, unless that was normalized, per capita or however you do it. Anyways, that was just one comment, so I didn't know if that what that fact you threw out was kind of corrected based on the number of people, vaccinated or not. But, yeah, basically, for Omicron, the vaccinations aren't stopping infection, obviously. And the second point I wanted to make, I mean, I never got vaccinated, and I got infected twice at least. I got the early Alpha variant, and then I got Delta here right around Christmas, this last Christmas here. And they were very different infections, and I got long COVID after the first one. And I just wanted to make the point that, I had that same sort of attitude, which was kind of a risk analysis saying, death rate's pretty low, I'm pretty healthy, and I'm kind of anti-vax mostly to begin with, or I was brought up that way. So I figured, with the percentage of death, I had, and my health, I had a good chance of being okay. And it definitely, the Delta variant was really hard on me. So, in short, I just wanted to stress that there are a significant number of young, healthy people that are getting like long COVID and seriously ill, and people are dying. So it's not completely, we shouldn't completely dismiss it as, it's not a real pandemic type of thing. I understand where you're coming from, and I love what you guys are saying. I just wanted to throw that out there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I appreciate your level-headed and candid questioning. The numbers, and if Dr. Pete wants to say anything to the statistical numbers of vaccinated versus who is getting infected and or the Omicron variant being evading the quote-unquote vaccine's ability to stop it. The numbers, I think, in our county, you're in Humboldt here, so I think here in Northern California, I don't think there's more than 60. I think 56 or 60% of the population have received one or two doses. So I don't think they've got a fully inoculated public. So the people that do seem to be getting it more from the three main reports that I was bringing out in tonight's show. One was the UK, which was very open and transparent about it from day one, but pretty much in April started shutting down the data, saying that they were no longer funding mass kind of questionnaire policies, vaccination, and then results. They basically stopped reporting on that and saying that essentially there's no use doing it anymore because, quote unquote, it wasn't working, and that they were still seeing COVID cases and that the variants that were coming now were basically self-nullifying themselves. People were catching it. As you said, the Omicron variant is very, quote unquote, a contagious variant, not like supposedly the other variants weren't, but it's very contagious with very mild symptoms. So I think the papers were mainly the UK paper, the one in Australia, which we might got into it in a little bit, but 1,700% increase in hospitalized patients are the vaccinated, not there's four times, four out of five hospitalized patients are vaccinated, and then the other.
Well, that's on top of Australia having very low numbers before they started the vaccine program. That's another research article.
So, and then there's the other one, the New Zealand Ministry of Health, showing that the triple vaccinated are now more vulnerable to COVID infection and hospitalization than the unvaccinated. So I do appreciate your questions, caller.
Okay.
Dr. Pete.
Okay, I'll listen off the air. Thank you, guys.
Sure. Yeah, you're welcome. Dr. Pete.
I couldn't hear the caller at all.
Oh, you didn't. Okay. Oops. Okay, well, we'll have to, I think we'll probably just skip that then. Not that we wanted to, but if you didn't hear it, then not much we can do.
Well, there's one thing I want to say to the caller, is that the tests that say you've had SARS-CoV-2,
mm-hmm.
you know, the PCR has been proven to have lots of false positives. The rapid antigen test has been proven to be fairly inaccurate. And the gold standard, so they say, SARS-CoV-2 antibody test can test antibodies for coronaviruses you have had at any point in your life. And the fine print of the SARS-CoV-2 antibody test, I know because I took the test, it says you can have a false positive for SARS-CoV-2 if you've ever been exposed to a coronavirus, such as the common cold. So in answer to the caller, I think some of these flus are getting misdiagnosed. I mean, even Deborah Birx of the CDC said that early on in the pandemic, that approximately 25% of their COVID cases were influenza-like illness and not SARS-CoV-2. And the other thing I wanted to say is that, yes, influenza kills people every year. And it's not something you want to take lightly, whether it's influenza from pneumonia or from SARS-CoV-2. So, yeah, it does kill people. And we're not trying to say that this doesn't kill people, but we're trying to say that these data figures that we're being told on even the CDC's website are not matching up, because influenza-like illnesses should not just all of a sudden disappear and all we have is SARS-CoV-2.
And we have another caller.
Do we have another caller?
Yes, we do. Well, let's see if they hung out. Caller, you are on the air.
Hi.
Okay, so caller, you're on the air. What's your question? Where are you from?
I'm from the area here, Humboldt, Northern Mendo. Can Dr. Pete hear me too? Can you all hear me?
He's on what we call TELUS 2, and it often has problems here, and he may not be able to hear you. Dr. Pete, do you hear the caller?
I can hear someone talking, but I can't understand a word of it.
Well, hopefully Andrew and Sarah will pass on the meat of it if he has...
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, but just the why I'm calling is, especially after the OxyContin scandal, it just seems to me like the American Medical Association, the union, the people, the doctors and nurses all together would have more power, or at least a little bit of power, over the pharmaceutical industries that are patsying them out to be croakers. You know, I mean, I don't think they're okay with being used in the way they are and going against their Hippocratic oath
to do
the wrong thing. And I just want to ask you overall, the gist is, why do the doctors that I know would be on your side to do the right thing, and nurses, why do they seem so powerless? I mean,
okay, well, that's a very good, Dr. P, I know you couldn't hear the question, but the caller's question about the seemingly powerless ability of doctors and nurses to resist what's going on when they smell a rat. And I think most people have smelt this rat fairly early on. I wanted to bring out our next subject, which was the mass formation psychosis.
There is some of that, but there is just some brute force that they lose their job or have their license taken away if they don't follow the proper line politically.
Okay, I have a follow-up question on Dr. Pete's response, if you can still hear me, and I'm there.
Go ahead.
Okay, I would like to know, I know unions have some power, and even on an individual level, this should be on a mass level, and we're talking about people's lives, so I know that's what I'm saying. It seems like the majority of doctors and nurses would be on the right side, and I've seen it, you guys said, instead of, being able to organize, they get individually persecuted and prosecuted in courts.
Well,
and usually unions have more power than that. So I'm wondering why the union isn't standing up against Big Pharma.
A lot of it is fear. Fear and exerting control over your finances by canceling you. It's all part of a media brainwashing, social brainwashing.
I think they're listening in.
I wanted to, Dr. Pete, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. I wanted to just mention this mass formation psychosis. It kind of the definition is aligning a large part of society to a certain cause, event, or series of events where their attention focuses on one small point or issue. And it's been used to describe the ascent of Hitler, the Hitler Youth Movement, and ultimately the Nazification of Germany in World War II. All these things led to a blind eye being turned to the horrors of those times, not just the persecution of the Jews, the seizing of property and internment in the labor and death camps associated with the Holocaust, but every aspect of the war in which so much life was lost. And they were aligned with the leader who sowed discord and vowed vengeance and the Germanic superiority worldwide. This was something the Germans could be united in and rally round their leader for having been deflated by Germany's loss of the First World War and the sanctions and penalties levied against Germany as a result of their being defeated in it. So for COVID, this mass formation psychosis took the form of the vaccine narrative and the imperative that governments knew best and were the arbiters of truth. Dissenting scientists were vilified or cancelled by today's masters of the universe, the totalitarians veiled in social media-esque cuddly and cute thought police, sanctioning your free speech and right to self-determination as enshrined in our Constitution in law. And Dr. Pete, your opinion on this, we've specifically covered totalitarianism in the past, and that last caller's question was related to this very question I was going to put to you.
The educational system is increasingly, if you weren't in the military, you can look at the boot camp for preparing people to be soldiers and see similarities between medical school, overworking them, stressing them by depriving them of sleep. Those are effectively brainwashing techniques to get them to conform to the system, not to question the authority of the professor in one case or the authority of the officers in the military. But all of formal education has been moving in that authoritarian direction. Dr. DeSmet's analogy between the virus vaccine cult and the Nazi cult. The analogy is very close, but the democracies, so-called, have used somewhat subtler methods, public relations, propaganda. In the First World War, the U.S. had an office of propaganda that convinced most Americans that Germans were bloodthirsty Nazis. bloodthirsty monsters, and that was revived during the Nazi period to make people think the soldiers were as monstrous as the propaganda said. But the democracies get almost as cultish a polarization between the enemy who is all evil and our side, which is all good. Public relations builds up through advertising and education a similar ideology in which people don't want to think about the virtues of other cultures and the way they do things. The manufacture of consent is the idea of using public relations, advertising, propaganda, and education to keep people from thinking about the actual issues and turning it into us against them, even without the involvement of a war and having an enemy to kill. But going from the manufactured propaganda consent, if you have the pre-existing factors that Desmet itemized, loneliness, atomization, loss of social bonds in the culture, work at jobs that make no sense and separate you from other workers and make you feel like your life is devoted to a meaningless activity.
So I have to break in because we are almost out of time and we have a caller who's been very patiently waiting. Caller, you have got 30 seconds. Ask your question.
Right, thank you. This is James. I'm from Arizona. My niece was recently vaccinated with MMR and chickenpox at the same visit. And then she had a temperature within a week. My mom gave her Tylenol, and she had a febrile seizure. Is this more a vaccine problem or a Tylenol problem? That's all. Thank you.
Dr. Pete, did you hear the caller's question? I'm sorry that you were cut off there, but did you hear the caller's question?
Yeah, Tylenol has very serious side effects. And, for example, prenatal use of Tylenol is well associated with the increased risk of autism. And it's a matter of toxic effects. Any inflammation during gestation or poisoning by something such as Tylenol will increase birth defects and neurological defects such as autism.
So do you think that febrile illness was...
Or the seizure, was that from the Tylenol in combination with the COVID vaccine, the MMR COVID vaccine?
It wasn't the COVID vaccine, it was MMR and...
sorry, she had MMR, not...
They tell...
The measles, mumps, and rubella.
They warn people not to use aspirin before getting vaccinated, because aspirin actually defends against the harmful effects of vaccines. But Tylenol is poisonous enough that it doesn't protect very well against the inflammatory damage.
Let's hold you there, and thank you very much, Dr. Pete. Let's give out your information. Thank you for joining us.
Okay, you're welcome.
For those people who've listened to the show, they are recorded on the audio archives. Folks, if you go to the tab on kmud.org, go to the audio archives, the last Friday, a third Friday of each month, Ask Your Herb Doctor is under Friday Night Talk. The show can be downloaded. We've got a bunch of shows to upload, which we still haven't done, but Dr. Pete's website is raypeat.com, R-A-Y-P-E-A-T.com. go check him out, folks. He's been doing this for about 40-something years, and he's got lots of articles and several books that he's written and newsletters that he just produces bi-monthly. Go check him out. And IAMS, Western Botanical Medicine, both licensed medical herbalists, and until the third Friday of May, my name's Andrew Murray.
My name's Sarah Johannesson-Murray. Thank you for joining us in tonight's radio show.
Good night.
Good night.